So the 19th chapter of the Book of Vayikra contains within it many, many laws. It's like a chaunt of laws. But there are three or four laws in the chapter which seem to be laws that relate to disability. And it happens to be that if we were studying the Tanakh of the 19th chapter of Vayikra, it's a double chapter. All the laws that appear in the first half are doubled in the second half. For example, Lo Tasu Avo BaMishpat appears in both halves. Ve'ahavta L'somebody Kamocha appears in both halves. It's a chapter with two halves. Each half has a law related to disability. 1914 has a law related to disability. Lo Sekalel Chereish, don't curse a deaf person. You imagine that it means that a deaf person can't hear you curse them, so don't curse them. That's like taking advantage of their disability. Lifnei ver lo titein michshol, don't put a blind stumbling block before a blind person. Again, that seems to be harming people with a disability. In this case, the disability is being unable to see. V'yareisam elokecha ani Hashem, fear God. And you have a very similar verse at the end of the chapter. With a different disability. Stand up for the elderly. And we have the same concludatory phrase, because this is also disability, that the elderly person here, as seemingly described, cannot stand. And therefore, you should stand, like they say on the subway. You should stand when an elderly person comes because they can't stand the whole length of the trip. So you should stand and give them your seat. Okay, so we have, three, maybe four laws here related to disability, one in each half of the chapter, ending Vayareisam Elokecha. And the common theme here would seem to be that there are, in every society, there are people who are, different and have disability, and you shouldn't take advantage of that. And to the contrary, you should treat them with heightened respect. If I said that there were laws in the Torah about disability, and I asked you to codify them, you'd probably say that these relate to the laws of ethics. These are ethical laws about how to treat disadvantaged people in our society. To this day, ethicists are interested in exactly this question. And this would be appropriate for a series of classes all about Jewish ethics. For whatever reason, the rabbis of the Talmud, about each of these disability laws, said, actually, it's not at all talking about what you think it's talking about. The Talmud says, it cannot be that the Torah has a series of laws related to disability. I'm not entirely sure why the Talmud is so confident in that fact. It may have to do with the fact that the idea that you should treat the disabled well might be subsumed under a general, the Ahavta L'Reacha Kamocha, or something like that. And so, about each of these laws of disabilities, the rabbis say it actually means something totally different. Standing up for the elderly is changed by the Gemara in Kiddushin, not to refer to standing up for the elderly per se because they need a seat and they can't stand. It turns into that respecting the elderly, honoring the elderly, then it's expanded not just to be elderly, but anybody who needs honor, Torah scholars. It turns into what you may have seen at a wedding, that when the grandparents walk by, everybody stands up, not because the grandparents need a seat and they may not be disabled, but just to fulfill this pasuk. And then when the rabbi walks down the aisle, everyone stands for the rabbi for the same reason. What looked like disability law turned into something totally different, which is respecting people in our society who deserve respect because of greater stature or wisdom or the like. Similarly, lo techalel chereish, not to curse the deaf, is changed by the Talmud to refer to cursing any Jew. Because when you think about it, we shouldn't be cursing anybody, and there's no reason to curse any Jew. And so what was originally seemed like a law related to disability, not to take advantage of the fact that somebody can't hear by mocking them. So no, just don't curse anybody. And then, and this is what we're here to discuss right now, Lifnei Iver Lo Titein Michshol is similarly changed, that it does not refer to putting a stumbling block before the blind. It refers to something else. It's a metaphor. It's a metaphorical stumbling block before the metaphorical blind. And it means that we shouldn't, arrange circumstances that other people fail. Among the commentaries, there was a very, very spirited discussion about the question, if a Jew sees a blind man crossing the street and then trips the blind man, whether that's a violation of do not put a stumbling block before the blind. The Minchas Chinuch of Rav Yosef Babad in the 19th century actually wonders, maybe it's not. Because if blind here doesn't mean blind, it's a metaphor for, you know, somebody who doesn't know what's going on. And stumbling block doesn't mean stumbling block. It's a metaphor for, causing somebody to fail. Then maybe the Torah merely says don't cause somebody to fail instead of talking about literal stumbling blocks. This is a spirited discussion among the commentaries. The Meshech Chachma of Rav Avraham Simcha of Dminsk says, no, for sure, if you put a stumbling block before the blind, you violate this, and that this law has two parts. It has a literal part, which is literally making stumbling blocks, a stumbling block before the blind, or, digging a hole in the street and nobody sees it. And then there's a sort of expanded, metaphoric, other statement of the law, which is not to help cause failure for other Jews. When you scan the Talmud never once anywhere in the Talmud has an analysis of actual stumbling blocks before actual blind individuals. There's no section of the Talmud which, again, evaluates how big the stumbling block has to be and how blind the person has to be. And, you could imagine a Talmudic discussion of what if you put the stumbling block, but then warned him or put a sign? What if the blind person is accompanied by a non-blind person? That's never discussed in the Talmud. In contrast, in a few occasions, the Talmud discusses this in a metaphoric sense. And that's, again, why among the Achronim, there was a very spirited conversation. If the Talmud never takes this literally, never gives contours and definitions of what this means literally, does that mean that the Talmud wants us to take it metaphorically and not being about the blind at all? And again, that would be consistent because the Midrash Halakha, Sifra, about all three says don't take it literally. But yet a student studying the Tanakh would find it difficult to say these aren't three disability laws. These are three totally disconnected laws about you'd codify in totally different areas. Honoring the elderly, if it's honor and respect the elderly, you'd put it with Kibud Av Va'em or Kavod Rabo, which is where that law is traditionally codified. And, cursing people out, you'd put in the ethical laws. So the student of Tanakh says, given the structure and the way these are presented in the chapter, they must all be grouped together. But the Talmud doesn't do that. And the Talmud sort of separates these into different places. Stumbling block before the blind looks like it's civil law. It's about how humans interact and whether somebody might harm somebody else. So stumbling block before the blind generally gets put with civil law, and standing up for the elderly gets put with honor and respect laws, and cursing remains in the ethical laws. That's the way it is taken in rabbinic Judaism. And now we'll transition to discuss stumbling block before the blind and its nature as one of the civil laws. The Rambam makes the decision to put a stumbling block before the blind in civil law, but I think he puts it in the wrong section of civil law. I would have expected it that it would have gone in the section of human damages, because this is really one human being causing damage to another human being by giving them bad advice. That's where I would have expected to see this in the Rambam. Yet the Rambam's codification of this in the laws of murder seems to be quite striking. Here is the Rambam in the 12th chapter of the laws of murder. The Rambam was in the middle of talking about weapons control, and because this is the whole section about murder and about people harming each other, the Rambam said that dangerous weapons should not be given over to people who will not use them the right way. Says the Rambam in the penultimate law, in the penultimate chapter, Kol she'asur limkor la'akum, asur limkor li'Yisrael shehu listim, v'bdei shemitza machzik yidei ovrei avera u'mach shilo. It is an example of putting a stumbling block before the blind to give weapons to people who will abuse them. V'chein, and similarly, kol ha'machshil ivel badavar, anybody who, in the sort of metaphoric sense, encourages the failure of somebody who is blind in a particular matter, v'siyo etza she'ena hogenes, and you prompt their failure by giving them bad advice, or you prompt their failure by encouraging them to make bad decisions, and that the other individual does not see. Of course, the Rambam chooses see here intentionally to continue the metaphor, doesn't see the true path. This individual has violated the negative commandment of do not put a stumbling block before the blind. If somebody asks for advice, give them good advice. I cannot explain to you why the Rambam presents this law in this context. I would have expected that the Rambam would have said something like, maybe in the ethical sections or maybe in the laws of damages, a Jew should not cause another Jew to fail. Therefore, you should give a Jew good advice. Then give me some examples of good advice. Give me some examples of bad advice. And then quote me this verse in Leviticus, Lifnei ver lo titein michshol. I can't understand why the Rambam, as an afterthought almost, in the discussion of weapons control, the Rambam says, okay, these are some scenarios where you should have weapons control, and these are situations where you don't need it. Oh, yes, and by the way, if your weapons go and end up in the wrong person, by the way, you have violated the negative commandment of a stumbling block before the blind, which also applies in a million other categories besides weapons control. I can't really understand why the Rambam chooses to present this law in this particular context, but that is what the Rambam has done. I can't explain it to you other than pointing out that that's what he said. The original paradigm of stumbling block before the blind person still stands behind the curtain. What's the idea of the stumbling block before the blind? The stumbling block before the blind is something where you know this will harm them. It's not something which is potentially going to harm them. You know it will harm them. And you also know that they have no agency, no realistic way to stop themselves from being harmed. If there were somebody who owned suntan lotion and who knew all about sunburns, and you came to them and you said, I will advise that you come with me to the beach without suntan lotion, and don't worry, you won't get a sunburn, that might not be this violation. This violation requires the individual to be iver badavar, blind in the matter, not knowing. And again, it needs to be something like a stumbling block before the blind that you know that it's wrong. So when we're in the context that we're starting with the disability, we're not going to come and say, oh, there's a positive commandment to give people good advice, because our primary focus is don't trip people up, basically. There's a way to understand this to make it much more into an ethical kind of law to give good advice, but then it's ve'ahavta l'recha kamocha. Ve'ahavta l'recha kamocha, love your neighbor like yourself, is how you know you have to give good advice. So it's very funny how this not stumbling turned into, give people good advice. Let's read the next halacha on the Rambam. V'asu le'asi etza tova le'akum, o le'eved rasha. This law of putting a stumbling block before the blind, does it apply to non-Jews? The Rambam says that if there is a non-Jew, you shouldn't give them good advice. V'afilu la'asio etza she'aseh devar mitzvah, v'umei birusho asur. You're not even allowed to encourage a Gentile to do a mitzvah. V'lonis nasa Daniel, and the reason why Daniel was thrown into the lion's den, according to the Talmud, that he asked Nebuchadnezzar to give charity. Nebuchadnezzar, had a vision that he was going to lose his kingdom, and he turns to Daniel and he says, Daniel, I'm asking you, can you give me advice? How can I save my kingdom? Daniel says, well, the way to save your kingdom is to give charity. And Rambam says, well, you shouldn't have given him good advice. Is this law apply to Jews, or does it apply to Gentiles as well? Further complicating these matters is that the Talmud does seem to say that one of the examples of putting a stumbling block before the blind is giving Eiver Menachai, a piece of a live animal to a Gentile. Namely, the Talmud seems to apply this law even to Gentiles. The Rambam makes no mention of that. The Rambam had every opportunity to say this law applies to Gentiles as well as Jews. Didn't do that. At the end, seems to maybe indicate that this law only applies to Jews. The biggest omission in this particular Rambam is a qualification of this law that appears in the Talmud that the Rambam does not mention at all. The Talmud, on more than one occasion, says that the notion of giving bad advice only applies betray ibre dinahara, which roughly translates into the question, if you have a scenario where you were not necessary in the stumbling, do you violate the negative commandment? In my suntan lotion example, he could have gotten a sunburn even without you. In the example of encouraging somebody to purchase a home that they can't afford, they could have made that bad decision without you. In the case of the biblical stumbling block before the blind, the blind person would not trip without you. You are the one who caused him to stumble. And, the distinction is sometimes subtle. If you go to his house and you say to him, I have an idea, I want to sell you a timeshare, this is the best investment ever. And he would have known from a timeshare, he wouldn't have had access to a timeshare. You're actually indispensable. You didn't just give bad advice. You were a cause in the actual stumbling. That's different from he wants advice. He comes to your house. He says, I hear about a timeshare. Should I do it or should I not? From the Rambam, you get the impression that as long as you've given bad advice that you knew was bad and that the other person did not know was bad, you have violated this commandment. Even if you were not indispensable to the crime, you have violated the commandment. But other Talmudic sections seem to argue differently, that it's only if you are vital. If somebody's a nazir, they're not allowed to drink wine, and they had no access to wine, and you procured the wine for them. That's another wrinkle that appears in the Talmud and not in the Rambam. The more we imagine this law is still living in the shadow of the actual stumbling block before the actual blind person, the more likely we will be to limit this law to cases in which you actively caused the stumbling. You proactively gave the bad advice. You gave advice that he wouldn't have gotten anywhere, or you gave him, armaments that he really couldn't have gotten anywhere else. Or the Talmud in one place describes lending money and interest, where he had no other way to violate this Avera without you. But when you edit that out of this law, as the Rambam did, and you seem to say that any bad advice, even when you are not indispensable to the failure, is consumed under the law, you're moving it further and further away from its biblical origins. Because now, even if you weren't the one who actually put the stumbling block before the blind, even if the blind person, somebody else put the stumbling block before the blind, and the blind person just asked you, can I go forward? And you said yes, with the stumbling block being there that somebody else put. So you understand why the Talmud provides the limitation that it does, given the biblical origins of where this comes from, the simple reading of the text. And the Rambam seems to not, share that limitation, which raises a serious set of questions, both on the Talmud level, like why is the Rambam not citing what appears in the Talmud, and also on the level of sort of operationally, how does this work? If even light advice, so the Rambam says, chizaki de over avera, light support is sufficient to violate, to violate this, how far does this go? If you see a Jew, on Shabbat, who, drives their car on Shabbat, and you see them on Shabbat and you wave, and you say Shabbat Shalom, does that count as giving them bad advice? Once you expand it, as the Rambam did, to include any bad advice, even if you're not indispensable to the stumbling, it becomes very hard to figure out what the limitation is and how far this actually goes. One last dimension of this law is whether the violation is grounded in the advice or in the stumbling. If you look at the verb the Rambam uses, the verb that the Rambam uses is kol ha-machshil. That's not the verb that was used by the Torah. The Torah uses the verse lo titain, do not place the stumbling block. As we noted, the Torah seems to be focused on the ethics. And when you're talking about the ethics, it's the putting of the stumbling block, which is the ethical problem. You shouldn't have put it there. The more you put this as an example of civil law, though, the more you're inclined to say, civil law, the violation is not in the bad advice, it's when the person carries out the advice. And it's hamachshili verba davar. To violate the negative commandment, your advice has to be efficacious in causing the person to actually stumble. But if they haven't stumbled, then there's no violation because it's civil law, and civil law is only violated when you achieve the negative consequence. I'm not 100% certain that the group, you know, that this reading of the Rambam is correct, and it's a matter of dispute in the Rambam. And the word machshil means cause somebody to stumble. But even if I say I cause somebody to stumble, do they actually have to stumble, or I just have to cause them to stumble, even if they don't actually stumble? This concludes our discussion of a stumbling block before the blind and our investigation of whether it's an ethical law focused on me being an unethical person in my treatment of those who really need my help and support versus the other extreme, a civil law prohibiting somebody from the result of causing somebody else to have failure, or whether the true nature of the law lies somewhere in between.